Hi, my name is Stephen Krein.
And I'm Unity Stokes.
Welcome to another episode of Startup Health Now, a weekly show celebrating the healthcare transformers and change makers who are reimagining healthcare.
Today we've got a great episode with two amazing guests. We've got the founder Bob Stern of At Point of Care and his trusty sidekick Dr. Sandeep Poolam, the Chief Medical Information Officer. Going to be having an amazing discussion. They've just integrated Watson into their amazing technology platform, and they're going to be sharing how they're bridging the gap between doctors and patients.
Stay tuned for a great episode.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. The future is to those who take it.
Welcome back to Startup Health Now, a weekly show dedicated to celebrating the healthcare transformers and change makers reimagining healthcare. I'm really excited for today's episode where we've got Bob Stern and Sandeep Poolam, who are the CEO and Chief Medical Information Officer of At Point of Care. Guys, thanks for coming in and talking to you tonight.
It's great. Thanks for having us.
And Bob is also a five-time serial entrepreneur, and we got a doctorpreneur in the house. So
thank you.
It's great to have you guys here.
Thank you.
So one of the things we like to do at the beginning of every episode is kind of get a little bit of an understanding of both your backgrounds, because I think not only have you done this before, Bob, I think you just said it's your fifth time. I want to go back a little bit and just give a little bit of context to how both your backgrounds and how you guys came together.
Okay. So I started my first business 34 years ago. It was in medical education, and I've been in some form of medical education for all that time. During that time, we found the need to spin out businesses that weren't really part of the core base business of Projects of Knowledge, which was really doing live medical meetings. So we did that with CMEinfo.com, which was a board review business. We did that with Fingertip Formulary, which was a business on aggregating data on formularies that pharmaceutical companies didn't know they had or needed. And then we had MedPage Today, which was based on the premise that doctors were the last to get medical news. And now we have
that
point of care.
And you sold that to Everyday Health.
We sold that to Everyday Health, yes, a few years ago.
So you sold all four startups.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
And you're a glutton for punishment, come back to the healthcare space again for a fifth time?
I know, something.
All right, why did you come back?
Well, I had one more thing to do, because when we had MedPage Today, I thought the one thing that was really missing was the information. That it was one thing to get the information, the news of what was going on, but it was really important to me to give them more information on how to take care of the patient and give them the more in-depth, and that's not what that business was. It was really news stories, breaking the news, covering the medical meetings, bringing all that to light for the physician, and I felt we had one more thing to add to that. And had we still owned MedPage Today, we would have added At Point of Care to MedPage. So this gives us an opportunity to add more in-depth information that they actually need when they're seeing a patient. And then we thought we wanted to bring the patient into this as well. So we created a combined platform for shared decision-making with the physician and the patient.
And so you call this a clinician and patient collaboration platform, or a
Correct.
Mobile clinician.
A mobile first.
Yes, got to have the mobile first.
And how long ago did you started the company? Two years ago. And how did you meet Sandeep? And tell us a little bit about how you recruited him over to help join you to build this great company.
Well, before he talks, I'll just tell you that I met him at Blueprint. And he was great at introducing us to a lot of people, even though we weren't working together. And then when his first entrepreneurial effort, or at least the first medical entrepreneurial effort, was his ability to leave that. We talked, and I said, he asked me for a referral to other businesses, and I said, well, why don't you come and do this with me?
That's a lot of people say you're the most active doctorpreneur out there. I'm constantly hearing
exactly.
this. I'm seeing this. You're one of the most active healthcare transformers in Startup Health. But yeah, let's hear about your
background. It's just because it's, you know, my background after I trained as a doctor was due to some family situations where we had illness. I took a break from the traditional pathway of, you know, residency, fellowship, etc. And my wife was also in residency at the time. So I had this opportunity to take a break, and which, you know, unknown to me, helped me realize that I had interest in, you know, entrepreneurial events and activities beyond healthcare, as just practicing clinical medicine. And I just, you know, had my own business that was nothing to do with healthcare, which was in digital media. And, you know, it was a great experience learning how to get people to give you money, right? And we were building something which was fun and helping design and, you know, build digital media rooms for living rooms and stuff like that. It was just to have a break from all the stuff that was happening in our life. But that led to, you know, me building a successful business, but then realizing that I had all this training that I wasn't doing anything with, and got an opportunity to work with one of the founders of Medscape at MD-Lynx, which I learned a lot about how you can take what you've learned in practice, but then also apply it to different areas. And it was just around the time where a lot of the changes in healthcare were happening, and I saw there was bigger opportunities to do something with that and building something that would be beneficial to doctors, right? And then led me to Blueprint, where I had the opportunity to build a company to help manage readmissions for heart failure, met Bob there, and because the company was in New York, my family lives in DC, it was getting too much, you know, I thought I was capable of doing that, but obviously the geography didn't help out. So met Bob and saw what we were building, or they were building at Point of Care at the time, really addressed the need for what was lacking with a lot of the patient-facing applications that were being built, which was connecting that information back to doctors. And when I saw what was the capabilities that the Point of Care platform had, it was the natural extension of what to do with this information.
And, sure. So I have a question, because as you just mentioned how active you are, you've seen a lot of startups, you see a lot of startups.
Yep.
What, besides the idea of what they're doing, what made you choose to actually, you know, hang your hat here?
Yeah, it was the fact that doctors were using it, right? It was, I mean, I saw the numbers of users that were logging on and registering and every month when our, you know, David or CTO would put up the numbers, like, this is crazy. Like, the value that they were providing just on the intrinsic using of the application to get access to medical information, and then the ability to enhance that with the patient data, and like, it was good to have that engaged group of doctors and nurses to begin with. That was the key.
So, crazy question, because I think this is the crux of why we're so excited to talk to you guys today. You don't hear traction and users and customers with a lot of healthcare startups yet, especially ones that are just at that time, well, I guess, a year old.
Yeah. Well, that's what's so unique about us, right? Because, you know, when we learned this the hard way. It took us 18 months to take an idea, build an MVP, do a pilot, and get one customer, which, you know, it was just a handful of clinicians that were using our service at the previous company. And with what we had the opportunity to start with at Point of Care, it gave us sort of like that unique advantage, if you will, to be able to test and enhance our service quickly. And so, yeah, it's hard to find a healthcare startup today that can say they have close to 200,000 users that are potentially, you know, built to adapt this technology.
And revenue.
And revenue, yes.
And revenue. And what we think is a very unique way of funding the beginning stages of a startup. And one of the reasons, you know, and we've known you actually longer than we've even had at Point of Care in the Startup Health program. And one of the reasons we were so intrigued by the team and the company was because you took a non-traditional path in today's age to building a startup, which is not funded with outside capital, but funded with real revenue. Even though if it's not the ultimate revenue stream you think is the big opportunity for the company, you chose to do something very non-traditional. Bob, can you tell us a little bit about that decision? Because I know you built other companies very much the same way and had great success in building them and selling them. But tell us a little bit about that decision, doing it with that point.
Well, I guess because I've been around for a long time, it's more of a traditional view. I always thought you wanted to present to investors a real company with real revenue and real people using it, as opposed to some amorphous idea where you know, I speak to a lot of young companies, and they're, you know, they're asking me, how do I commercialize this? How do I monetize this?
But yet they're getting funding.
And yet they've, you know, raised $5 or $6 million. I said, well, listen, whatever you're doing, don't stop. Don't ask me. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to change your view. But so I come from a more traditional background where I felt that you have to sort of show that you have some traction and that the business has legs and an ability to grow. And it was also faster as well. I mean, we didn't have to do pilots. We didn't have to do, we didn't have to prove technology to other people. We were able to say, okay, this seems to work and we want to build it and we can go for it right from scratch without having to spend, you know, 8 or 12 months running around just pitching possible investors.
So how long from when you came up with the idea for App Point of Care to signing your first customer? How much time took place?
It was about a year.
About a year. Yeah. And so you self-funded up until that point?
Right. Well, so App Point of Care grew out of a product that we started. So that's how all the products that we've done start from a projects and knowledge product that looks like it should be on its own. So we had something called Living Medical Textbook, which essentially then became At Point of Care. So we were able to transfer a lot of the users from that experience who used the Living Medical Textbook to the At Point of Care product.
So you kind of have this little idea factory.
Pretty much.
Called Projects and Knowledge.
Right.
And from there, you kind of test a bunch of ideas
right.
and try to figure out where there's
right.
something. And then that
Correct.
Is what gave birth to At Point
Correct.
Of Care.
When did
Correct.
When did you know that you had something? You know, when did you know to spin something out and that there was really an opportunity to develop this new business?
So I think it was when we realized that the problem that most physicians were having was at the point of care, they didn't really have anything to look at and refer to when a patient came in with a puzzling the medication wasn't working, the treatment wasn't working, there were some side effects they didn't understand, and it seemed like that's where they were using our Living Medical Textbook. So our Living Medical Textbook, which really we thought would be used like on weekends or at night or whatever, was really, the day part was daytime. So when we realized that it's used during the clinical practice day, we said, wow, it'd be great if we could really exploit this and make this, you know, really useful at the point of care. And then, and I remember having lunch with Steven at a restaurant.
Chinese food.
Yeah, and he said, what do you mean, are you gonna put patients and doctors together? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh, okay. So that was sort of the beginning of when that whole thing came together, when we thought, well, if we could do it for the doctor, could we also bring patient data in at the same time? And that's sort of when Sandeep and I got together, and he was really able to get his hands around this very quickly and really help commercialize this for us.
And so you mentioned a little bit of the metrics before, 200,000 users. So bring this together now. So
yeah.
The product gets spun out, you sign your first customers,
right.
and you've been able to, in less than 2 years, create a business with, give me a little bit of the
data. Well, yeah, so initially it started out with the opportunity to partner with a great organization, Multiple Sclerosis Association of America, which already had engaged patients that were looking. Their biggest hurdle was patients were using digital applications but couldn't get that information back to providers. So we showed them what we were building, and essentially they adapted our multiple sclerosis patient app to become theirs, and that's how we got our first big group of users, which was 17,000 MS patients now, and that happened back in April or March of this year. So we've now started to connect the two sides together finally, starting in the MS space. And that led us to other opportunities, which we'll talk a little later about this, you know, thing we're talking about. With,
yeah, you got some exciting things going. So there's a patient app and there's a physician app.
Correct.
And
14 disease conditions.
Yep.
And besides MS, what are some of the other ones?
COPD, asthma, multiple myeloma,
Parkinson's,
diabetes.
Actually, AFib.
The multiple myeloma app and for the patient and the doctor was selected by Emory just recently to be used in a clinical trial study. So what was happening was clinicians were sort of, patients would walk in saying, hey, I'm using this app to track my health. Can I show you what's going on? And a lot of doctors and nurses, et cetera, wanted to see this information, but they didn't necessarily know how to receive it, where it made sense to look at it. So our approach was, okay, if you wanted, what was the key measurements and metrics that you wanted to see back from your patients? So that's what led us to actually, you know, I told Bob this before, is I don't think we should be building patient apps, right? There's other companies that can do that. Let's just focus on connecting the two. But there was no other way for us to know what data and what valid information was being collected by the apps.
And being able to make the connection.
Securely, right? And so that's how we started connecting the two sides even further. So on the back end, it's, you know, it's fully secure, compliant, and makes it very easy now for a doctor on the platform who's already, so the users group that we have, to now to be able to help answer that question when a patient comes and saying, hey, how can I show you what's happening with me? Well, now they have an answer. You can either use one of our apps that I'm going to show you, or if you find an app, you can actually connect with me as well.
So one of the problems that we had to, so one advantage that we have, because we have so many doctors to talk to, is would you use this and how would you use it? And one of the, so just to riff off of Sandeep here, one of the issues when patients bring in sort of an app that the doctor doesn't know, one of the big issues is, okay, I don't know what it is, but guess what? I'm also not getting paid to look at this. And I don't really have time to get your email, and I'm not going to the cloud to look at a patient portal the way everybody thinks people are going to patient portals. So we said, okay, great. So when would you want to do this? I said, well, if you could give us something when we're actually seeing the patient and we're actually getting paid for it, and we could look at data that the patient is bringing in when it's useful, rather than listening to 10 minutes of the patient ramble about something they think is bothering them. But if I can look at an app and really see data on it at the point
so
of care.
This amazing panel.
So we have this,
we have this
internal group of people that we can turn to and say, well, when will you really use something like this, and when is it most useful? So they said, I get paid, and the patient is bringing in data. Those are the two best places for me to look at it, because they were also worried about some of these people who send them emails at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that the doctor's looking at it at 3 o'clock in the morning, which they're not. They were worried about malpractice issues. You know, people think, you know, people are trained to think if you don't get your lab results back from the doctor, everything's okay, even though it may not be. So people are trained like that at 3 o'clock in the morning. If I write my doctor and I don't hear back, everything must be okay. So that's how we positioned it. So we positioned it as useful at the point of care, when you get paid, when you're seeing the patient, and when it helps with the diagnosis, when the two of you are together.
So what's the driver, the patients or the doctors? What do you need to get more of? Is signing up the 200,000 practitioners,
yes,
is
that's
leveraging the 17,000 patients and growing that? What's the driver? Which one is the bigger driver?
It's going to be the patient, I think, you know, for the most part.
Well, going forward, yeah, but what allowed us to get to that fact, though, is we had the clinicians, right? So now that we have that, that's what allowed us to build the revenues on the existing model. But the patient groups going forward are going to be the key now to go back and say, hey, look, this is the area that you've been asking for. What are the, so we're in the process now, we're working with other types of patient groups in the disease areas that we're in, that allows us to not go out and try to recruit patients one by one, which can happen. But
Is that who pays you, by the way? Who's paying? So pharma's still the payer.
Right. So pharma's still the payer.
And that's been like that from day one.
Yeah, 1852, whenever this thing started. Right, day one, pharma's been the payer, because it's also a model that works with the doctors, right? They're sort of used to that model, and they're okay with it. And patients, they're not used to any model yet, so free is still good, right? So if the doctor says this is a good app, and I'm going to really look at it when I see you, it sort of all comes together. It's a hurdle we don't have to overcome. Mm-hmm. We don't have to say it's going to cost $10 a month or $20 a month.
So
we don't have to overcome that hurdle.
So the doctors currently don't pay.
Correct.
The patients don't pay.
Correct.
Pharma supports this.
Correct.
And you've generated how much revenue to date now? Because I know it's...
We'll probably do close to $3 million this year.
So and what did you do last year?
2.3.
Okay, so you continue to grow the revenue. Pharma's paying for it.
Right.
Long term, you think pharma pays for this?
So that's what I'm saying. So the pharma model is, so this is what started happening, right? About 4 years ago, the reason we're all here today is because the same reasons that pharma cares about connecting with doctors and patients are the same reasons health systems and insurance companies want to connect the two. It's all about better quality and better outcomes. So from a pharma company perspective, if you can give a doctor a tool that can enhance that collaboration and help them better manage their patients and learn and get something back in return, it's a great opportunity for them. And everyone talks about this concept called beyond the pill, but we're living that, right? That's our toolkit gives the pharma company, not just on the CME side now, but actually give them a real stake in getting people better.
Right, so can you give us an example of a pharmaceutical company using app point of care and connecting the patients and the doctors
together
for everyone's benefit?
Do you want to talk about it? Go ahead.
So, I mean, on both sides, it's different, right? So on the physician side, it's really about medical affairs and medical education, right? They have a vested interest in supporting activities that are unbiased, peer-reviewed by outside sources, but supporting it so that the doctors in their particular areas of interest are well-educated. And by the way, pharma, once they give the money, is completely out of it. They don't get a chance to see anything, they don't review anything in advance, which is a stringent requirement that we have. And so, you know, it takes a lot to give a lot of money and know that you're not gonna have any input. On the patient side,
what do they get back at the end of the day?
So we give them analytics. We give them aggregated de-identified analytics. So we tell them where people, so on the doctor side, we tell them they've looked at this treatment section, or they've looked at this drug section, they've spent time on this video, they spent time on this audio, and it's just aggregated de-identified data just showing what their interest areas are and where they're going. Ultimately, what we're really trying to get at with the patient information is outcomes data. So right now, the biggest problem with outcomes, which people have been trying to get for years, is they have to do chart audits. And no doctor's doing the chart audit. It's just too crazy. There's no time. If you offer them $1,000 a chart, they still don't want to do it. Right. It's just too time consuming, too crazy. But now we can longitudinally track what the patient is doing and what the doctor is doing and feedback to the doctor how well they're doing with that patient on a long-term basis.
Okay, so you're giving pharma a good ROI for their...
And the doctor.
And the doctor. And so in this case, the pharma wins, they get what they want, they get their analytics, and they have a much better understanding of the workflow.
Right.
The doctor wins because you made it easier and you put actually data at the point of care.
Yep.
And the patient wins because...
They're getting better. And if they're not getting better, at least they know why they're not getting better and how long that's been a problem. You know, going to the doctor is one of those areas where you go dark to them in between appointments. It's one of those weird things that we don't have almost in any other existence in life. But when you go to the doctor, you haven't seen them in 3-4 months. There's nothing going on,
and
unless there's an emergency. So to be able to come in and show the doctor what's been going on since you've seen them last really gives the doctor insight and light into areas that they've not seen before.
So as point of care scales, how likely is it that new business models emerge from where you guys started out, from how you're generating millions of dollars in revenue today?
So,
So that's the opportunity that's ahead of us, is what we've learned and built with funding from our existing business partners and collaborators is that core service we provide can now fit into the world of health systems and the payers. So the same, we're not doing anything different than what we've been doing with our pharma clients, but now you can use that same product. So rather than sending back de-identified aggregated, de-aggregated information, you can now actually target outcomes data from health systems to your providers within our platform. Then those doctors and nurses can actually see what's going on with their patients once they leave the hospital. So the same basic core product can work to enhance that. And for insurance companies, they told us that they've been struggling with how do you get relevant information to providers when they're with their patients, right? So one example is, we've been told by payers, they don't have a system today to be able to share with the provider when they're with their patient, hey, this patient is not taking advantage of plan benefits that are free to use them to help them manage their obesity, diabetes, etc. They can't message that today to the provider.
Going back to where we started this conversation, what are some of the pros and cons of developing a business this way? You start with a very clear business and business model, but yet there's all sorts of opportunity for where this goes. What are some of the pros and cons as you think about this as an experience?
Trying to stay focused, really. We had a conversation today with a company that wants to physician referrals, opinions, second opinions with us. So Sandeep in the car and I are saying, oh my God, if we take this on, it's going to be like distracting from all these other things that we're doing. So we have to really decide whether that's in the best interest now. I mean, it sounds like it's a great idea and it'd be great to do that. And then e-patient visits. This guy wants to also put an e-patient visit on our platform. But, you know, we have other things, and so we have to weigh that now. So the worst part is that you get distracted and you take on too much, or you start going down an avenue that you're really not sure of, and then you sort of forget about the core business.
So do you, is that your biggest challenge with the idea of real business, right? Starting a company that's got revenue and customers early on while it's still developing.
So you want to keep that customer. So one of the issues that we have is that we have to remember what story we're telling what day, because when Sandeep is out, you know, with the pharma customer, he's got to remember that story. But when he's out with the health system, he's got to remember that story, which is a different story.
It's funny though, that story doesn't change, it's just who the players are, right?
You have to say it a little differently.
Healthcare is a funky sector in that way. Yeah. That the person who pays for the value is not the person that receives the value, it's not the person that approves the paying of the value. So the money flow is interesting. You guys have created a very unique way of funding your company to date this way. Do you think this looks this way? You know, go back to the pros and cons. I mean, does this become a long-term strategy for the business you think you'll be in 3 years from now, or do you think it morphs into a completely different customer?
Part of the reason why, you know, we are looking at raising extra funding right now is to help us be more nimble, right? Rather than waiting for us to organically grow, there's other opportunities that we see today that we just, I wish we had the resources to pursue that, because we've been asked, could you do this for us? And we're like, well, this is where we're today, that's on our roadmap, right? So that's where the extra funding would help. But otherwise, you know, the other thing that's missing, I think, the advantage is that we know we're on a path of trajectory where we're going to continue to grow our revenues, right? The disadvantage is when we're out there trying to showcase what we're doing, it's not as sexy as coming up saying, hey, I have this like awesome cloud-based service that will change how patients
can... Mobile first.
Well, that's the thing, right? You're competing against something more flashy, where if you look at the fundamentals, it's okay for them to wait 3-4 years, and then what's going to happen? So I think sort of like, you know, we see that as sort of a disadvantage sometimes, because we see where things are, we see where the market is today, but we're also planning for, you know, we're not ignoring all the things that are happening. The thing is communicating the value that we see where we take this platform, and that's sort of a challenge sometimes.
So what advice would you give to fellow entrepreneurs, other healthcare transformers, in, you know, really trying to weigh the decision between this, you know, focus on big vision, don't worry about the business model, just go try to scale something, versus this practical, pragmatic approach to building a great business and then spawning great businesses?
Really hard. It's really hard, because some guys really do it well, right? They have this kernel of an idea that makes no sense, but they can go out and they can raise a fabulous amount of money, and maybe from that they eventually figure it out and then get to a good business. So I wouldn't necessarily talk anybody out of that. I think that one of the things that I see the most, and I've also invested in a couple of startups, which I, you know, don't regret investing. But having said that, the problem is that their other VCs, the bigger ones that have invested in, have all told them, don't go out and sell until the product is perfect. And it could be, and they keep just sort of focusing and turning the product over and doing more with it.
Rapid iteration and keep tweaking and tweaking.
Without going out and selling it. And then by the time they go out, they may have missed the marketplace, or they may have been too late for that. And I think some of these VCs really have given them bad advice. To me, if you're going to do something, have a product. I tell you the first question I ask now, what is your business model? And when they say to me, we don't know, can you help us find one? I say, well, how did you even come up with this idea? I mean, so it's just a thing, right? It's an idea, and it's always that story, right? My grandfather's in the hospital, and this happened, right? So I can fix this one little, you know, thing, and they think they can build a business on fixing, you know, that the tray came and no one took the cover off, so they'll have an automatic hand that takes the cover off or something, right? And they'll think that they'll fix that problem, as opposed to looking at it on a macro basis and really understanding the healthcare system, which between Sandeep and I, and the amount of years I've been in it, we understand that what's going on out there. And I always tell everybody, you come from a different business and it may look like other businesses, but I think the classic example is when I started in this business and I went to work for a very small, medium-sized pharmaceutical advertising agency, and Young & Rubicam came in, you know, 30 years ago or more and bought them because they tried to get into the pharmaceutical business, and they staffed it with people who were selling Oldsmobiles and Buicks and Crest toothpaste. And it didn't cut it because they did not understand the market.
Well, that same thing's happening today. So you guys are experienced healthcare,
right.
You know, practitioners and entrepreneurs.
Right.
We're seeing a lot of that today. We're seeing new entrepreneurs come into the space that know nothing about healthcare. How do you sort of, where do you think we are today? Where do you think it's going with that context?
You know,
that
it's
you're
funny.
About?
I think you guys know who Mark Goldsmith is, right? From mm-hmm. Hill Smith. Sure. He said it best. He said, if you're going to start a company today, make sure you're positioned to win today, win during the transition, and win tomorrow. If you don't think along those terms, you're not going to survive. Because no matter how much funding you raise, if you can't generate revenue by year two or three, it's not going to work.
So that transition, just to be specific, because I think there's a couple things happening at the same time. We've got healthcare reform kicking in, and we're kind of just in the beginning stages of that. You've got mobile health. I mean, there's an upcoming announcement from Apple. By the time this airs, yeah. It'll be announced. Samsung, Intel, other companies, Google, obviously entering or re-entering the market with solutions that are now coming together with a global footprint and devices that are a fraction of the cost with a magnitude of exponential capability. And then you've got this golden age of entrepreneurship, which is what we're all talking about, which is how do you reconcile all of this? At this moment in time,
yep.
You know, there's probably the big question as an entrepreneur, am I right or am I right by pursuing a business first that has accelerating user traction and customers, paying customers, a real business model.
Crazy.
Right? And,
crazy.
And that's scalable right. While every day you open up your phone and read about company after company after company getting funded ideas.
You mean like the toothbrush that got $5 million a month ago?
And yeah, but as an entrepreneur,
toothbrush?
I know the age-old thing is, you know, am I doing something right or am I doing something wrong?
Well,
Do you think you're doing right now the right thing or the wrong thing for the future of your business?
So I can't imagine that, although no one else is doing this, so this is the problem that Sandeep and I struggle with, is that I can't imagine that everyone won't come to the same place that we come to with, and it's not going to be a big leap to say, wow, so the patient should actually be connecting their information to their doctor so that that can help in the diagnosis of the patient. Which, no, everybody stops right there. Everybody stops
you,
right there.
You heard about CarePass, right? Just a couple
CarePass, weeks ago. They blew it because they didn't connect their information with the doctor. And it was such you know what? With MedPage, I was always worried about Netscape waking up one day and doing what we were doing. And they never woke up. Thank God. They never woke up, and it was fantastic. So that's what I worry about now. I look at like CarePass, and we were worried about CarePass thinking, oh my God, but you know what? They were awake, but they weren't paying attention. And what they really needed to do is figure out a way, and we could have sold them that algorithm because we have it, of how to connect the patient and the doctor so that all that information flew to the person who can help you. You can't help yourself, right? So you can't help yourself. So you have to connect it to the person who can help you. So that's where we're at. And that's that missing part that we're providing, the link between the patient
and
the
doctor. So where does it go from here? You guys are doing all sorts of interesting things with IBM and Watson as an example. Where does it go from here?
So the Watson thing's big for us.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So we've been working on this for months with them.
Since Hims,
but could only announce it last week. With them. And, you know, a lot of people have been, you know, sort of thinking, well, the Watson thing isn't, you know, it's not what everybody thinks is. But I can tell you, now that we've released our first one on MS, it's fantastic.
Can you explain Watson and then explain that point, how you're playing with him?
Since he's the leader of Watson.
Yeah.
He's the Watson,
well,
among other things.
And what is Watson?
So everyone heard of the big, you know, press release a couple years ago where Watson won Jeopardy, right? It was the first computer to beat people at understanding questions and giving back answers. So that's what Watson. So IBM built this cognitive engine that can interpret natural language, so you can ask a question like you would your doctor or patient or you know, your friends or whoever it is. It's not trying to think of what keyword should I type into a search field to
so
get this answer.
Give me
it's like
example.
Artificial intelligence.
So almost, yeah. So,
no,
so,
I, have a, I have a patient, 46 years old, blood pressure, blah, 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 on this drug, whatever.
Everything he's like, so that's your
taking
question.
Real data, right? Yeah. Taking the patient data
and
putting it into Watson and coming back with, I mean, he tried it with a cousin of his over the weekend, a neurologist. We hadn't even trained it yet fully on the neurology part, and it was coming back with the answer. He said, yeah, these all make sense.
So Watson actually learns from the knowledge that you feed it, right? So think of it as a baby going to school, like kindergarten, elementary school, high school, college, graduate school. So that's, so we, our partnership with Watson allows us to get our own baby Watson. And we have the advantage that our content, which we've been building for the last 30 years, has always been evidence-based, peer-reviewed, so it's the cleanest, most, you know, best content you can get that doctors need access to and get, you know, real answers to questions that are reliable and credible. So that was our first big advantage. So when we teach Watson this information, it's literally hundreds and thousands of journals that it's sourcing now.
And Watson's now built into your product.
Yeah, it's in our app right now.
Yeah.
So
we launched the first app last week.
So you now have the power of that ability. Remember, Vinod Khosla said this at our last Data Palooza. What are you going to do when doctors get bombarded with a million data points, not just, you know, three blood pressure readings a day? What are you going to do when the volume of medical journals goes to 2 million published articles a year? You can't.
2 million more they're not reading anyway.
So walk us through the patient-doctor sort of interaction at the point of care
with
this technology.
So it happens today, right? So when the same thing that happens today when a patient comes in where you cannot, where you're trying to understand what's happening with your patient, but then trying to remember, am I doing the best thing, or am I missing something? That's the thing that's always in the back of your head is, you know, I don't think I've seen this before, but, you know, what do I do? Do I wait till the patient leaves? So today, with all the technology available, you know, some people have actually turned to Google or Wikipedia to find answers, which is ridiculous, right? You go to a trusted source, but you don't have the time or the efficient ways of accessing that. So Watson fills that role. So now, you know, you don't have to, it's essentially you picking up a phone and calling the expert in that field.
But not giving you the final decision. It's not Watson telling the doctor, here's the recipe now. It's just putting in front of them the data that they need that's current
and
make the best choice. Because our brains are just not big enough to retain all that information.
So you think it's a game changer?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
For both the patient and the doctor.
Yeah.
For the doctor.
Yeah, so imagine that same power as we learn how to use this better. One of the things that's on our map is to make the same tool available to patients. So you now have that power.
Right now it's just for doctors.
Doctors, yeah, because it's, you know.
We will add it to the patients.
Right, though. So it's Watson's with the training that we're doing right now. It's probably at the level of college, right? When it gets better and more competent at these conditions, and it has to learn by condition. So the goal is to be able to make that same kind of comprehensive tool available to patients. And it fits right into what, you know, Khosla was saying is you have to be able to pull all this information together, make it actionable and available when needed. So without these kinds of tools, I think, you know, he's right on where you can say, you know, 80% of the decisions that doctors make could be made on the patient side if you're given the right tools. So that's where things are heading.
And a lot of the clinical decision-making tools, unfortunately, tell them, you know, do this, and doctors hate anybody telling them do this. So we're really a suggestion. We know we pull all the information in front of them, but they still get to make the decision.
It actually presents it back in confidence intervals. Say, this is 95%, I'm 95% confident.
Watson presents it back in confidence.
And so the clinician can review this very quickly and say, yeah, you know what, this makes sense. Let me corroborate this and go on from there.
All right, so I want to switch gears for a second and just talk a little bit about your targeting of customers and getting pilots and users and all the things you
did
to get started. Do you pay pilots?
Do we do what?
Paid pilots?
Well, we don't, but we just sell.
Explain that.
We just sell.
I'm using the framework of pilot as early customers.
Right.
Willing to help you validate, but let's talk.
Will that help me get money if I use the word pilot instead of? I'm obviously using the wrong word.
Right. Go ahead.
I need a new dictionary. So we go in and we sell the opportunity to be on our platform. So the opportunity is, so if you go to a pharma company, so that's our customer now, we're in front of their customers, right? So they're being supportive, and a physician, and we say healthcare professional now, really, we don't even say physician, because I would say the nurse practitioner, the physician assistant, the pharmacist is hugely important in this whole paradigm, especially the sicker you get, unfortunately. All these people play daily roles in your life, and they're all part of our platform. So what we do is we go in and we say, you get a chance to show how supportive you are of this therapy area, and people appreciate that, even though they don't get to say anything about it, and we make a very big deal about the fact that with that we do third-party peer review with physicians out there. So if they do detect anything that looks biased to the advertiser or the sponsor, we take it out. So we're very meticulous about that.
So what are you looking for more of? If there are people listening, so we talk about this being a show to celebrate the healthcare transformers and change makers.
Right.
When you think about customers, when you think about investors, when you think about users, for people listening today, what do you need more of? And there's got to be people, my guests, listening that would listen to what you're saying and saying, wow, this could be helpful to my organization, whether I'm inside a pharmaceutical organization, I'm a payer, a physician or clinician.
Or even just talent.
Or talent.
So the big challenge on the pharma side always is, and it isn't just the pharma side, it's really the doctor side. So the two things the doctor and pharma share is that most patients are not compliant. They're not compliant with their therapy. They'll give it up after a couple of days or a week because something happens. It could be a sexual issue, it could be a dermatological issue, it could be a cognitive issue, it could be a lot of things, and they won't go back to the doctor. They'll just stop using it. But with our patient tool and with the doctor tool, it holds the patient as responsible for monitoring and seeing their progress. So it's goal-oriented. It's a little bit different than just sort of taking a drug and then sort of not being part of the process. And then when you go into the doctor's office, you can show them what's been going on, and they have hard data now to really help you, guide you as to how your therapy is going.
So real quick, who are you calling on in the pharmaceutical companies? What do you need more?
So there's two sides. So on the medical education side, there's a whole group of people on medical education.
Okay, so it's medical education.
It's medical affairs, medical education. And then on the pharma side, now it's digital marketers.
Okay, so both of those are your target. And then in the clinician side, you know, who are you typically calling on in the practices or the hospitals?
Right, so the health systems, it's been the chief medical officer, chief quality officer. So our product is really well positioned to leverage the analytics now that hospitals are reporting, especially with meaningful stage 2 and 3.
Give me an example of, you know, so when they look at the analytics and the doctors are doing well,
we can partner with a lot of the companies out there. Like a great partner for us would be a company like Alere, Phytel, Crimson, that have the analytics that hospitals are now using to talk to their clinicians about how they're performing. The challenge has been they don't see this information until 3 or 4 months down the line. So there's a gap between when they see how they're performing versus what they can do about it. So we can incorporate that right into our tool and actually build a little light that's like green or red or yellow. So it'll show you how you're performing in near real time, because the data's there. They just can't get it down to the clinician. So by incorporating that right into our clinical, like our reference tools, you can now have that information at the fingertips of clinicians so they can see how they're performing. And the benefit to the health system is that they're now able to say, hey, we're using things that are helping us meet meaningful stage requirements and also improving quality. And for insurance companies, it's the network provider services group, which are looking for tools to give to their high performing provider networks. So the top 1% of providers within, like, say, UnitedHealthcare, Aetna, Humana, they're actually doing the things that are improving care for their patients. And so they want to be able to share and distribute those best practices throughout their entire network, which has an impact on HEDIS scores. So that's who we're talking to in the different areas.
Fantastic. So what's next for Point of Care? What are the next couple of years look like?
Well, we hope to really penetrate the health systems. And the payers. I mean, they are not our customers yet. We are just teaming them up. We're talking to them. It's a new area for them, and it's a new area for us. But on the health system side, it really helps in another way as well. So there are evidence-based products out there that they use, you know, UpToDate and other products that have been in the field for a long time. The problem has been that even though there are evidence-based ways of taking care of patients, every health system and every medical center really does it slightly differently. So it's not exactly the way you can do it. So you might look something up in an UpToDate, but then have to interpolate it to how you can do it within your health system. We can actually white label, take all the information that health system demands to procedures to follow, and incorporate it into our clinician platform.
And you haven't done that yet.
We have not.
But it's coming down the
path. Right. So, and the clinician then, once they look at it, they don't have to interpolate. They just follow exactly what's there because it coordinates with the health system's methods of that treatment protocol.
Yeah, it's really transforming to be sort of like this clinical dashboard that doctors and nurses would have that aggregates all the relevant things that you currently can't, I don't think we'll ever end up in an EMR system, right?
Right.
So, you know, all the things that Apple's doing with HealthKit, it's great, but if you can't get that to your practitioner.
Even they don't get it to the practitioner. So everything I've read about it, it stops, which is so interesting that, you know, they're not looking at the bridge that we're looking at of getting it to the person who can take care of it. Who cares if you have it on your iPhone?
Last question that sort of follows up on that. Where do you both think this is all going? What are your biggest predictions for, say, the next 24 or 36 months in
general? For us personally or in general?
Well, you tied into that, but in general as well. If even HealthKit's not tying these things together yet, you guys are.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of focus on the consumerization of healthcare, which is great, which needs to happen. But at the same time, you can't ignore the clinician, right? There's not a lot of cool products being built for doctors that fit with their, like, everyone forgets about clinician engagement, right? Everyone's about patient engagement and consumer-focusing products, but there's not a lot of services and tools that are being specifically built for clinicians.
You can't be too cool, right? Because if it's too cool,
come on, Bob, you're so cool.
No, we're the uncool. We are definitely.
That's actually the packaging.
We are definitely the uncool kids.
Where's the packaging?
Uncool. Yeah. You guys have a real business generating millions of dollars of revenue.
Yeah. Sucks.
Done this multiple times. Got a great team. So
you're hurting. You're hurting.
Seems
us.
Pretty good.
You're hurting us.
No, Bob. This is just.
No, we're so uncool. We're the uncool kids.
You know what though? When the
nobody wants to hang with us. Nobody wants to hang with us.
Your fellow healthcare transformers want to hang with you.
We're together because we're the only two that would hang with each other.
We thought you're a startup health company, so this, you know.
Yeah, but nobody wants to hang with us. I mean, although actually, it's interesting. We're working with a couple of startup health companies that actually worked out really well. You want to hear about that?
We do, actually. Let's wrap up.
Go ahead.
I can't. Which one? I'm like, my head's spinning.
Talking about it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So they actually. So that's one of the enhancements that's getting added in here. So, you know, when you think of it from the clinician's perspective, what is the thing that's missing, right? Watson's great, but then also how do you communicate and share with your patients relevant questions that come up? So working with Mark and his team has been great. You actually now incorporated their anatomy.
And that's a
explain Plocket Anatomy for a second. So everybody understands.
You do it better.
I do it better?
Yeah.
So in the old days when you went to the doctor and he said, oh, this is the problem in your brain, they took out a brain and they showed it to
an
you.
An old model.
Like a plastic model.
Right.
Velcro.
Which someday will be my brain, you know, just sitting on a table there turning gray. And they show you what the problem is, or if you broke your elbow, they take out an elbow and a skeleton showed. What Mark Campbell has created is this tremendous digital formation of these. You know,
it's like Google
tools.
Earth for the human body.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. It's graphic. You can turn it. You can put notes on it.
You can send it to your patient, whatever.
But here's the real opportunity. The opportunity is that why we're working together is that on the pharma side, we can sell sponsorships to that. And Mark makes money and we make money. So that's how, you know, that's how some of these partnerships can work, where we can add nice features to our platform.
And DocFin too. Yeah. Can you explain DocFin real quick?
Yeah, DocFin has a really great engine to help us take all our. So we're doing a couple things. We're helping them with their CME aspect of their product.
So they wanted CME, so we're giving it to them.
And then we get to now do the single sign-on process that they've built that allows us, our clinicians, when they find a relevant article, if they're at an institution that has institutional access to that journal, to get straight access to the full text so they don't have to go to the PubMed page, they get access to the full text.
I love it. Integrating everything together, healthcare transformers working together. You guys are about action. Honestly, when we were talking about who we wanted to have on this episode, you know, as we're building this Startup Health Now formula of trying to figure out how to get out of entrepreneurs the very best of what they're doing so that other entrepreneurs and others can see the great work. You guys are great examples of action. And I think, Bob, when you look up, I know you're, you know, the daily struggle of watching other people do things with very little business, and you're sitting here with the real business. When all is said and done, the model you're following is working, and it will be a model which is going to be demonstrably better than I think a lot of others that are.
Okay, we have this on video. We have this on video now.
And audio right. in 2014.
But at the same time, like, you know, those crazy ideas need to happen, right?
Right.
So I can see that, like,
absolutely.
So I think there's space for both.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on all your
thank you.
Success.
Thanks for having us.
All right, thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Thank you.